Chapter 97. Bella, thus directed, would examine the window with the greatest attention, while Mr. Boffin would examine her face. The moment she pointed out any book as being entitled Lives of Eccentric Personages, Anecdotes of Strange Characters, Records of Remarkable Individuals, or anything to that purpose, Mr. Boffin's countenance would light up, and he would instantly dart in and buy it. Size, price, quality, were of no account. Any book that seemed to promise a chance of miserly biography, Mr. Boffin purchased without a moment's delay and carried home. Happening to be informed by a bookseller that a portion of the annual register was devoted to characters, Mr. Boffin at once bought a whole set of that ingenious compilation, and began to carry it home piecemeal, confiding a volume to Bella, and bearing three himself. The completion of this labor occupied him about a fortnight. When the task was done, Mr. Boffin, with his appetite for misers whetted instead of satiated, began to look out again. It very soon became unnecessary to tell Bella what to look for, and an understanding was established between her and Mr. Boffin that she was always to look for Lives of Misers. Morning after morning they roamed about the town together, pursuing this singular research. Miserly literature not being abundant, the proportion of failures to successes may have been as 100 to 1. Still Mr. Boffin, never wearied, remained as avaricious for misers as he had been at the first onset. It was curious that Bella never saw the books about the house, nor did she ever hear from Mr. Boffin one word of reference to their contents. He seemed to save up his misers as they had saved up their money. As they had been greedy for it, and secret about it, and had hidden it, so he was greedy for them, and secret about them, and hid them. But beyond all doubt it was to be noticed, and was by Bella very clearly noticed, that, as he pursued the acquisition of those dismal records with the ardor of Don Quixote for his books of chivalry, he began to spend his money with a more sparing hand. And often when he came out of a shop with some new account of one of those wretched lunatics, she would almost shrink from the sly dry chuckle with which he would take her arm again and trot away. It did not appear that Mrs. Boffin knew of this taste. He made no allusion to it, except in the morning walks, when he and Bella were always alone, and Bella, partly under the impression that he took her into his confidence by implication, and partly in remembrance of Mrs. Boffin's anxious face that night, held the same reserve. While these occurrences were in progress, Mrs. Lammel made the discovery that Bella had a fascinating influence over her. The Lammels, originally presented by the dear Veneerings, visited the Boffins on all grand occasions, and Mrs. Lammel had not previously found this out, but now the knowledge came upon her all at once. It was a most extraordinary thing, she said to Mrs. Boffin. She was foolishly susceptible of the power of beauty, but it wasn't altogether that. She never had been able to resist a natural grace of manner, but it wasn't altogether that. It was more than that, and there was no name for the indescribable extent and degree to which she was captivated by this charming girl. This charming girl having the words repeated to her by Mrs. Boffin, who was proud of her being admired, and would have done anything to give her pleasure, naturally recognized in Mrs. Lammel a woman of penetration and taste. Responding to the sentiments, by being very gracious to Mrs. Lammel, she gave that lady the means of so improving her opportunity, as that the captivation became reciprocal, though always wearing an appearance of greater sobriety on Bella's part than on the enthusiastic Sophronia's. Howbeit, they were so much together that, for a time, the Boffin chariot held Mrs. Lammel oftener than Mrs. Boffin. A preference of which the latter worthy soul was not in the least jealous, placidly remarking, Mrs. Lammel is a younger companion for her than I am, and lore. She's more fashionable. Apostrophe, but between Bella Wilfer and Georgina Podsnap there was this one difference, among many others, that Bella was in no danger of being captivated by Alfred. She distrusted and disliked him. Indeed, Her perception was so quick, and her observation so sharp, that after all she mistrusted his wife too, though with her giddy vanity and willfulness she squeezed the mistrust away into a corner of her mind, and locked it up there. Mrs. Lammel took the friendliest interest in Bella's making a good match. Mrs. Lammel said, in a sportive way, she really must show her beautiful Bella what kind of wealthy creatures she and Alfred had on hand, who would as one man fall at her feet enslaved. Fitting occasion made, Mrs. Lammel accordingly produced the most passable of those feverish, boastful, and indefinably loose gentlemen who were always lounging in and out of the city on questions of the bourse, and Greek and Spanish and India and Mexican and par and premium and discount, and 3/4 and 7/8, who in their agreeable manner did homage to Bella, as if she were a compound of fine girl, thoroughbred horse, well-built drag, and remarkable pipe. But without the least effect, though even Mr. Fledgeby's attractions were cast into the scale. "I fear, Bella dear," apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel one day in the chariot, "that you will be very hard to please." Apostrophe, "I don't expect to be pleased, dear," apostrophe said Bella, with a languid turn of her eyes. "Truly, my love," apostrophe returned Sophronia, shaking her head, and smiling her best smile, "it would not be very easy to find a man worthy of your attractions." Apostrophe, "the question is not a man, my dear," apostrophe said Bella, coolly, "but an establishment." Apostrophe, "my love," apostrophe returned Mrs. Lammel, "your prudence amazes me. Where did you study life so well? You are right. In such a case as yours, the object is a fitting establishment. You could not descend to an inadequate one from Mr. Boffin's house, and even if your beauty alone could not command it, it is to be assumed that Mr. and Mrs. Boffin will apostrophe, oh, they have already," apostrophe Bella interposed. "No. Have they really?" Apostrophe, a little vexed by a suspicion that she had spoken precipitately, and withal a little defiant of her own vexation, Bella determined not to retreat. "That is to say," apostrophe she explained, "they have told me they mean to portion me as their adopted child, if you mean that. But don't mention it." Apostrophe, "mention it. Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied Mrs. Lammel, as if she were full of awakened feeling at the suggestion of such an impossibility. "Meant I in it. Apostrophe, I don't mind telling you, Mrs. Lammel," apostrophe Bella began again. "My love, say Sophronia, or I must not say Bella." Apostrophe, with a little short, petulant oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe Bella complied. "Oh. Sophronia, then I don't mind telling you, Sophronia, that I am convinced I have no heart, as people call it, and that I think that sort of thing is nonsense." Apostrophe, brave girl. Apostrophe, apostrophe murmured Mrs. Lammel. "And so," apostrophe pursued Bella, "as to seeking to please myself, I don't, except in the one respect I have mentioned. I am indifferent otherwise." Apostrophe, "but you can't help pleasing, Bella," apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, rallying her with an arch look and her best smile, "you can't help making a proud and an admiring husband. You may not care to please yourself, and you may not care to please him, but you are not a free agent as to pleasing. You are forced to do that, in spite of yourself, my dear. So it may be a question whether you may not as well please yourself too, if you can." Apostrophe, now, the very grossness of this flattery put Bella upon proving that she actually did please in spite of herself. She had a misgiving that she was doing wrong, though she had an indistinct foreshadowing that some harm might come of it thereafter. She little thought what consequences it would really bring about, but she went on with her confidence. "Don't talk of pleasing in spite of oneself, dear," apostrophe said Bella. "I have had enough of that." "Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Mrs. Lammel. "Am I already corroborated, Bella?" "Apostrophe, never mind, Sophronia, we will not speak of it any more. Don't ask me about it." apostrophe, this plainly meaning do ask me about it. Mrs. Lammel did as she was requested. Tell me, Bella. Come, my dear. What provoking burr has been inconveniently attracted to the charming skirts, and with difficulty shaken off? Apostrophe, apostrophe, provoking indeed, apostrophe, said Bella, and no burr to boast of. But don't ask me. Apostrophe, shall I guess? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you would never guess. What would you say to our secretary? Apostrophe, my dear. The hermit secretary, who creeps up and down the back stairs, and is never seen. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know about his creeping up and down the back stairs, apostrophe, said Bella, rather contemptuously, further than knowing that he does no such thing. And as to his never being seen, I should be content never to have seen him, though he is quite as visible as you are. But I pleased him for my sins, and he had the presumption to tell me so. Apostrophe, the man never made a declaration to you, my dear Bella. Apostrophe, apostrophe, are you sure of that, Sophronia? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Bella. I am not. In fact, I am sure of the contrary. Apostrophe, the man must be mad, apostrophe, said Mrs. Lammel, with a kind of resignation. He appeared to be in his senses, apostrophe, returned Bella, tossing her head, and he had plenty to say for himself. I told him my opinion of his declaration and his conduct, and dismissed him. Of course this has all been very inconvenient to me, and very disagreeable. It has remained a secret, however. That word reminds me to observe, Sophronia, that I have glided on into telling you the secret, and that I rely upon you never to mention it. Apostrophe, mention it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Lammel with her former feeling. Meant I in it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this time Sophronia was so much in earnest that she found it necessary to bend forward in the carriage and give Bella a kiss. A Judas order of kiss. For she thought, while she yet pressed Bella's hand after giving it, upon your own showing, you vain heartless girl, puffed up by the doting folly of a dustman, I need have no relenting towards you. If my husband, who sends me here, should form any schemes for making you a victim, I should certainly not cross him again. Apostrophe, in those very same moments, Bella was thinking, why am I always at war with myself? Why have I told, as if upon compulsion, what I knew all along I ought to have withheld? Why am I making a friend of this woman beside me, in spite of the whispers against her, that I hear in my heart? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as usual, there was no answer in the looking glass when she got home, and referred these questions to it. Perhaps if she had consulted some better oracle, the result might have been more satisfactory. But she did not, and all things consequent marched the march before them. On one point connected with the watch she kept on Mr. Boffin, she felt very inquisitive, and that was the question whether the secretary watched him too, and followed the sure and steady change in him, as she did. Her very limited intercourse with Mr. Oaksmith rendered this hard to find out. Their communication now, at no time extended beyond the preservation of commonplace appearances before Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, and if Bella and the secretary were ever left alone together by any chance, he immediately withdrew. She consulted his face, when she could do so covertly, as she worked her head, and could make nothing of it. He looked subdued, but he had acquired a strong command of feature, and whenever Mr. Boffin spoke to him in Bella's presence, or whatever revelation of himself Mr. Boffin made, the secretary's face changed no more than a wall. A slightly knitted brow, that expressed nothing but an almost mechanical attention, and a compression of the mouth, that might have been a guard against a scornful smile she saw from morning to night, from day to day, from week to week, monotonous, unvarying, set, as in a piece of sculpture. The worst of the matter was, that it thus fell out insensibly and most provokingly, as Bella complained to herself, in her impetuous little manner, that her observation of Mr. Boffin involved a continual observation of Mr. Oaksmith. Won't that extract a look from him? ? Can it be possible that makes no impression on him? ? Such questions Bella would propose to herself, often as many times in a day as there were hours in it. Impossible to know. Always the same fixed face. Can he be so base as to sell his very nature for 200 a year? ? Bella would think. And then, but why not? It's a mere question of price with others besides him. I suppose I would sell mine, if I could get enough for it. And so she would come round again to the war with herself. A kind of illegibility, though a different kind, stole over Mr. Boffin's face. Its old simplicity of expression got masked by a certain craftiness that assimilated even his good humor to itself. His very smile was cunning, as if he had been studying smiles among the portraits of his misers. Saving an occasional burst of impatience, or coarse assertion of his mastery, his good humor remained to him, but it had now a sordid alloy of distrust. And though his eyes should twinkle, and all his face should laugh, he would sit holding himself in his own arms, as if he had an inclination to hoard himself up, and must always grudgingly stand on the defensive. What with taking heed of these two faces, and what with feeling conscious that the stealthy occupation must set some mark on her own, Bella soon began to think that there was not a candid or a natural face among them all but Mrs. Boffin's. Nonetheless, because it was far less radiant than of yore, faithfully reflecting in its anxiety and regret every line of change in the golden dustman's. Rokesmith, said Mr. Boffin one evening, when they were all in his room again, and he and the secretary had been going over some accounts, I am spending too much money. Or leastways, you are spending too much for me. You are rich, sir. I am not, said Mr. Boffin. The sharpness of the retort was next to telling the secretary that he lied. But it brought no change of expression into the set face. I tell you I am not rich, repeated Mr. Boffin, and I won't have it. You are not rich, sir. Repeated the secretary, in measured words. Well, returned Mr. Boffin, if I am, that's my business. I am not going to spend at this rate to please you or anybody. You wouldn't like it if it was your money. Even in that impossible case, sir, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.